Welcome everyone to today's W3C CCG meeting. We're very excited to have Wesley West from Digital Bazaar today to present on the verifiable credentials barcodes. I think we have a thread around the launch of the work item, verifiable credentials barcodes, about a month ago, and very glad that Wes can jump on to actually talk about it a little bit more. All right, so before then, just want to quickly go through some administrative stuff. First of all, just want a quick reminder of the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. I just want to make sure that we have constructive, respectful conversations here. Second, a quick note on the intellectual property. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So if you have any questions about that, or if you have troubles, sign into the W3C account, please let any of the coaches know. A quick call notes, all the meetings are being automatically recorded and transcribed. We'll try to publish the meeting minutes, audio recording and video recording in the next 24 hours or so. We use GG chat to queue the speakers during the queue. So you can type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue, or Q- to remove. Or you can type in Q? To see who's in the queue, and I will be moderating the queue. All right, just want to take a quick moment for the introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community, or you haven't been active and want to re-engage, please feel free to just unmute and introduce yourself. I see mostly familiar faces, so I'll jump to the announcements and reminders. So if anyone have any announcements or reminders, please feel free to unmute or add yourself to the queue. All right, a quick note on the upcoming meeting agenda. So next week, we will have work item updates and quarter 3 2024 review. So Will will lead that discussion. We have already sent out emails to different leaders for the different work items. So if you could actually take some quick time to fill out the presentation slides so that you can we can more easily go over them next week. That would be great. And then the week after, on August 20th, we'll have Anchor and Alex to talk about updates on the DID Link Resources work item, a more specific deep dive on the DID Link Resources work item. And then the week after, on the August 27th, we're very happy to have Gregory and Joni from DIACC to talk about Pan-Canadian Trust Framework. So that's the quick overview of what's coming. All right. Any other announcements or reminders? I know we're going to talk about work items next week, but any updates on the work items or anything that people want to bring up? All right, pretty straightforward. So let's get to the main agenda. Again, we're very happy for Wes to present on the verifiable credentials barcodes today. And by the way, if people got kicked out because sometimes when the presentation is large, GT actually will have service interruptions. If people got kicked out, just rejoin, just refresh your browser and rejoin. That would be great. Benjamin, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had one quick thing to say about the test suite office hours. It's moving from Wednesday mornings, Eastern time, to Thursdays at 10 a.m. This is to accommodate the DID working group's new special topics call. So our next test suite office hours will be this Thursday at 10 a.m. and I'm sending out those details now.
Sounds good. Thank you. Manu, please.
Hey, sorry if this was already covered. We've just made an announcement about the Verifiable Credential Playground. There are a number of new credentials out there that utilize the render method to kind of display and render trustworthy renderings of verifiable credentials. There is a current discussion kind of going on in the on the mailing list about that. This is the first of a number of different kind of announcements, VC Playground updates, that we'll be making over the next couple of, weeks. So that's the first item. The second item is, there have been a lot of people that have signed the letter of intent for the DID method standardization. So thank you all for, doing that. We also, so I think 50 plus, people have kind of signed the letter so far. If you haven't yet, please do. There's a sign up sheet for those that want to participate in the next set of meetings. We're going to try and find a time that works for as many people as possible as a next step. And then, we will start having kind of public open meetings about what that, standardization effort is going to look like. I expect a part of those discussions are going to be about which DID methods, which standards bodies, and some discussion around like charters and charter formation. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Manu. All right. Any other announcements or reminders or introductions and reintroductions? All right. Again, just a quick reminder, if you got kicked out, just do a quick refresh on the browser and you should be able to sign back in. All right. Wes, the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you so much. So hello, everyone. My name is Wes. I'm at Digital Bazaar, and I'm really excited to be talking to you guys about the verifiable credential barcodes work today. Just first things first, I want to note that the presentation format here is a little bit less than ideal. As Harrison referred to, we were having trouble getting the slideshow presentation to properly screen share, so this is what we've got. All right, so I'll briefly go over the agenda. So I'll talk about what the challenge is that we're trying to solve with this work and what current approaches are. I'll talk about what goals are for the technology that we're building. And then I'll get into some of the technical details. How do we use verifiable credentials to do this stuff? We develop a new crypto suite, which I'll talk about. How do we do status information for this stuff? And how do we use CBOR LD for VCVs as well? All right, so credential fraud is increasing. This is fairly well understood, and it's increasing for a couple of reasons. One reason is that traditional anti-counterfeiting technologies are losing value. So what I mean here are things like printing holograms or special ink onto a physical credential to be able to differentiate reals from fakes. And this kind of technology is losing value mostly because of increased public access to really high quality fake ID printing services. More so than ever before, there are, you know, shops set up that have professional grade equipment and hardware that can essentially mimic these technologies and print extremely convincing fraudulent ID for fairly cheap. Another is generative AI. So there are now deployed publicly accessible and extremely cheap tools that can... Sorry, I'm getting quite a lot of echo. Is that just on my end? Is somebody unmuted?
No, I think there is echo, actually. I think it might be on your end. Let me mute everyone else to double check.
Should be fixed now. It was Neil.
Ah, okay. Oh, got it. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so, right, generative AI. So generative AI tools are another factor increasing credential fraud, and that's because we now have these tools deployed that are publicly available and very cheap that can generate massive volume of very convincing images of fake IDs. These IDs can have any information on them, anybody's picture on them. They can be from anywhere, and they are very, very convincing. And the reason that generative AI works and the reason that these anti-counterfeiting technologies are losing value is because most physical credentials lack cryptographic security. Cryptographic security would obviate the need for things like holograms and special ink. And of course, current generative AI tools cannot forge cryptographic information. So, credential fraud is increasing. The main current approach to fighting credential fraud involves third-party verification services. But these, of course, are privacy invasive, proprietary, and often very expensive. So our proposal is called Verifiable Credential Barcodes, and it's fairly straightforward, at least at a high level. What we do is we embed a digital signature into the optical barcode that is printed on a physical credential. So this is anti-counterfeiting for physical credentials. And verifiable credential barcodes is built on standard or standards track technologies, including verifiable credentials, data integrity, CBOR LD, and bitstring status list. So I want to talk a little bit about what our goals are for this technology, for VCBs. One, of course, is authenticity. We want verification of a VCB to prove that that VCB came from the issuing authority. Of course, we also want integrity. We want verification to prove that the data on the credential has not been tampered with. We want real-time status. We want verification to prove that the credential has not been revoked or suspended. And importantly, we want to do this in a privacy-preserving way. We want to do it without things like phoning home to a source of truth database to get that information. We want simplicity, so we've designed VCBs such that they either reuse the existing barcode that exists on a physical credential. This could be something like a PF417 barcode on a driver's license. Or if there is no barcode, they add an easily consumable barcode format to a credential, for example, a QR code. And lastly, we want conformance, and the VCB technology stack, as I'll present it, is aligned with both global standards as well as Department of Homeland Security identity requirements. So I also want to touch briefly on some non-goals. So what is this technology not fixing? One, of course, is document theft. Having a digital signature cryptographically securing a physical credential is not a defense against the theft of that physical document. Another is document duplication. So we're doing this stuff with optical barcodes, and optical barcodes are images, and you can copy and paste images. And lastly, tampering of non-machine readable data. So some data on a document, for example, an image, a picture of a person, may not be digitally signed. And if it's not digitally signed, then of course verification does not secure that data. All right, so with that high-level stuff out of the way, we can go into some of the technical information now. So first, I'll go over, again, very high-level, how verifiable credentials are used for verifiable credential barcodes. So here on the right, we have an example, JSON-LD verifiable credential, and it's color-coded with the sort of building blocks it's composed of listed on the left. So we have context in pink. We have type information in purple, credential subject in yellow, issuer information in red, status information in green, and proof in blue. And something that I want to note here is that this is a very compact VC, and that's a really critical design goal for us when we're building these verifiable credentials. And that's because we have size constraints given the physical size and density requirements for the barcodes that we're generating. So we're generating barcodes that get put on something that's, you know, physically credit card sized. And of course, we're limited to how dense we can make these barcodes because we need commodity scanners and things to be able to read them. So we have some pretty serious data size constraints on how big these credentials can be. And as a result, we work to make them very compact. So talk a little bit about some of the type information, or some of the values you might see in credential subject dot type for verifiable credential barcodes. One is AMVA driver's license scannable information. So this communicates that this is a VC that's securing a document that uses a PDF 417 that's compliant with the AMVA spec, so like a U.S. driver's license. And another is machine readable zone. This indicates that we're securing a document that has a MRZ, for example, a United States Employment Authorization document. So people who are familiar with verifiable credentials might, look at the previous example and say, okay, well, where is the actual data, right? So credential subject is often where much of the data that a VC signs over goes. And in the previous example, credential subject only contains two things, type and something called protected component index. But none of the actual information that would be in something like a driver's license, name, driver's license number, expiration date, whatever, is actually in this VC. So where is the data? So the reason that the data is not in the VC itself is because the data that we want to secure to cryptographically sign is the data that's already on the card. It's not just this additional external data structure. Right. So we're adding this VC, but we don't want just this VC to be cryptographically secured. We want the data that's already on the card to be secured. And to that end, we've developed a new crypto suite for this effort, ECDSA XI 2023, which is, of course, a new data integrity crypto suite. So what is ECDSA XI 2023? Well, it's a variant of the RDFC 2019 crypto suite. It follows the same general process where you canonicalize a document with RDF dataset canonicalization and then add an ECDSA signature over the canonicalized document. The difference is that here, some data that's not in the VC is digitally signed as well. So the letters XI in the crypto suite name stand for extra information. And here in this use case, that extra information is data from the card itself. It's the data that's already on the card that we want to digitally sign. So that could be something like a canonicalization of data that's in the PDF 417 that already exists on a driver's license. Or it could be a canonicalization of the data that exists in a machine-readable zone on something like an employment authorization document. So verification for the XI crypto suite involves reconstructing this extra information from the machine-readable data that's on the credential. And then that extra information is passed to the verification algorithm alongside the verifiable credential. And if you're successful, what that tells you is that not only is the VC valid, but the data in the card on the card has not been tampered with. So I'll briefly talk about status now. So here we see what the status piece of the example that I showed before. And this has type terse bit string status list entry, and then just a URL and an index. Essentially, terse bitstring status list entry is a compact way to use bitstring status list. So we developed it as part of this verifiable credential barcodes effort, because as I mentioned before, compactness and size efficiency is really important in our use cases. So we have this terse bitstring status list entry thing. It's a compact way to use bitstring status list. And during verification, what happens is a terse bitstring status list entry is converted to a full bitstring status list entry. And this allows us to do real-time status checking for statuses like revocation and suspension. And of course, as I mentioned before, it's really important that this stuff is privacy preserving. We have to do this in a way where there's no, trackable phone home behavior and things along those lines. Okay, so next I'll talk about CBOR-LD. So the XI crypto suite serves two purposes. The first is that the data on the card is made tamper resistant because it's part of the digital signature. And the second is that payload size is small. That's because using the XI Crypto Suite, signed data doesn't need to be in the VC itself. It can live where it already lives, and then the VC knows how to sign over it without including that data. But even with the XI Crypto Suite, our payloads are still not small enough. So the constraints that we have for physical card design barcode density to be compatible with standard tools, our VC needs to be around 150 bytes. And the solution there is to use CBOR-LD to encode the JSON-LD in a compact form. So CBOR-LD is a JSON-LD compaction tool, essentially, where what it does is it processes the contexts that appear in a verifiable credential, and it uses those contexts to build maps from strings that might appear in the credential to integers. And importantly, it does this in a fully deterministic and invertible way, such that if I encode my JSON-LD VC, I get, you know, an object that contains a bunch of integers, essentially. And then when I receive that object, if I know what the contexts were that were used to create it, I can process those contexts myself and create the same map that was used to encode and then decode. So it's invertible, right? We can shrink it down, but we need to do it in such a way that we know that the person receiving it can, you know, decompress it back up. So here's an example of applying CBOR-LD to our example credential. So on the left, of course, we have the JSON-LD VC, and on the right, we have CBOR-LD. So I'm not going to get into the details of you know, where exactly these numbers come from and things like that, but at a high level, the color coding will show you what's happening here. So the contexts are being compressed down into integers, type information, integers, and so on and so forth. Some of the data that exists in here is not compressed. For example, proof value, I've kind of elided it here for, you know, a compact example, but this is, you know, 64, 65 bytes. And that, of course, remains bytes in the CBOR-LD, because that's not known to be, that value is not in any of the contexts and as such cannot be compressed. All right. So after we do CBOR-LD encoding, now the credentials are small enough that we can actually encode them into barcodes. So we have two examples here. We have a Utopia driver's license with a PDF 417 on the back, and we have a Utopia employment authorization document with a QR code on the front. So what's happened here? Well, driver's licenses already contain a PDF 417. So what we've actually done is we've constructed a VC that digitally signs over the PDF 417 that was already here, and then we've just stuck that sort of VC on the end. So we've added to the PDF 417 a verifiable credential that is a VCB that digitally signed the rest of the PDF 417. For the employment authorization document, it's a little bit different. So there are no barcode. There was no barcode on this before we added the VCB, but there was machine readable data in the form of an MRZ. So what we've done is we've added a QR code to the front of the document that contains a verifiable credential that digitally signs the MRZ data on the back of the credential. All right. So let's summarize that process. What have we done? So we're adding VCs to physical cards for a layer of cryptographic security against counterfeiting. That is the, you know, one sentence summary of what verifiable credential barcodes is about. And to do this, we needed to do a few things. We've created the ECDSA XI 2023 Crypto Suite that lets us digitally sign data that's on the cards, but it's not in the VCs. We created the terse bitstring status list entry mechanism to use bitstring status lists in a space-efficient way. And then we used CBOR-LD to further compact VCs down to fit within barcode size constraints. So what are some next steps here? Well, the first is pre-standardization and standards track work for the verifiable credentials barcode spec. The second is interoperability testing with verifiable credential verifiers. The third is deployment with California DMV to add verifiable credential barcodes to California driver's licenses. The fourth is deployment with DHS to add VCBs to employment authorization documents and permanent resident cards. Okay, so for anyone who's interested in taking a look at some of the, you know, the nitty-gritty details of how this stuff works, or maybe even implementing it yourself, we've provided a list of both the specifications that this technology is built on, as well as some implementations of those specifications that you can either look at or use. So for specifications, of course, we care about the VC's spec, the DI spec, CBOR LD, Bitstring status list, and of course, the verifiable credential barcode spec. And for implementations, we have multiple CBOR LD implementations, as well as a pretty cool new linked data CLI tool that supports CBOR LD, as well as verifiable credentials implementation, as well as the XI crypto suite, and a tool for converting verifiable presentations into QR codes. And last thing, I just want to note that the verifiable credential barcode spec now contains test vectors, and these test vectors include step-by-step instructions for both creating and consuming verifiable credential barcodes. And of course, we welcome anybody who's interested in implementing this stuff. For guidance or to report issues, please use the spec GitHub repo, and feel free to reach out to me by email if you have any other questions. Thanks, and I can take any questions now.
If you have any questions, just type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue. A quick clarification question. So the verifiable credential VC barcode in some ways is a digital signature for the data in the physical card. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Got it. But if the data is not in the VC itself, like what if someone just changed the data on the physical card? Will the signature still verify to be true, or
no? Like, so sorry.
No, please. Yes.
If you could, can you
clarify how that works?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So that gets to the core of the design of the XI crypto suite. So how the XI crypto suite works is that one of the inputs to verifying the signature, one of the inputs is a hash of a canonicalization of the data that's not in the VC, but that's still needed to verify the verifiable credential. So for example, I could create a verifiable credential barcode for a driver's license where verification tells me not only is the VC portion good, but to verify successfully, I need to have pulled out of some optically readable data on the driver's license. Name is Wes, first name is Wes, last name is Smith, and my driver's license number is this. So if any of those three things change, then verification will fail. So that's really the core concept of the XI crypto suite, is that extra information cannot change. And, you know, for the examples that we've given, extra information is machine readable information on the physical card itself. Does that make sense?
Oh, got it. Okay. So it has to be machine readable, right? It cannot be like non-machine readable. Okay. Got it. Okay. Thank you. Money, please.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. I mean, think of the way like regular driver's licenses work today. Like if somebody hands you or shows you their driver's license and you look at it, you have no idea if it's valid or not. And the barcode itself on that driver's license today, you can just go online and use free tools to generate whatever data you want to go on the back of that card, which means that it's pretty trivial to like create a fake barcode and put it on the back of a fake driver's license. the thing that this changes is the ability for anyone, right, that has this verify, and the verifiers are just like kind of free and open technology. It allows anybody to take a driver's license and check to see if that is a legitimate driver's license. Meaning it, you know, people can still copy the driver's license entirely, but it gives you some understanding of like today in whatever state you're in, this is a valid driver's license. You can't tell that today. Like that is not a thing that you can universally do, at least in the United States and in most countries today. So that's the big deal here, is that before, if someone handed you a driver's license, you're like, I have no idea if this thing's real or not. I don't even know if this is, you know, the data on here, is real or not. Whereas in the future, with this stuff on it, you can at least check to make sure that that barcode on the back contains data that was issued by the state driver's license authority. So that gives you, like, before you had no idea, now you can actually check it to see if it lines up to a legitimate ID. That's it.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions? Money, please.
Yeah, I do have a question for Wes. So, fantastic work, Wes. This is, you know, this is awesome stuff. As you were putting all of this together, what do you feel is the most difficult thing, for kind of a developer to implement here? Like, you know, what is the most challenging aspect of getting a verifiable barcode, working?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's go to the sort of breakdown of the pieces here. I would say that if you are planning to implement a CBOR-LD library yourself, that would be the most challenging piece of the puzzle here. If you're planning on using an off-the-shelf CBOR-LD library, then great, that's not such a big deal. But CBOR-LD can take some time to get right, and you have to get it completely right, because if you decode a credential with a slightly different version of CBOR-LD than the other person encoded the credential with, everything breaks. So I would say CBOR-LD is the most challenging piece in this stack if you're going to build it yourself. And that's assuming, you know, a baseline level of familiarity with verifiable credentials and the like, and data integrity. I would say that the ECDSA XY Crypto Suite is pretty trivial. It's really not hard. I mean, assuming if you know how the RDFC, kind of basic EDSA RDFC 2019 Crypto Suite works, it's that with like one more step. Terse bitstring status list entry is not a difficult modification to make to regular bitstring status list entry. So really I would say it's CBOR-LD if you're going to implement it yourself, assuming you have a baseline level of familiarity with the core technologies and the rest of the stack.
Sorry, I have a kind of a different question. This is more on the kind of verifier experience. Can you kind of quickly walk through what a verifier's experience look like, maybe their user experience and UI when they actually scan the barcode? What does like their the UI on their phone look like?
Well, I can't speak to what the UI on a phone would look like, because I mean that's sort of the verifier level decision. What I could do is walk through the process in the verifiable credential barcode spec of actually verifying one of these things. Would that be helpful?
Yes, that would be good. Thanks.
Okay. So this is a little bit removed from the UI level, but at least we can see exactly what the steps are here. This is encoding. Where is decoding? All right. So if you are going to consume a verifiable credential barcode that's on a driver's license, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to scan the PDF 417 and get some bytes, right? So here what we see is a kind of a standard driver's license. This is messy, but this is what driver's licenses look like if you pull the bytes out of the PDF 417. And at the end here, we see this is essentially a verifiable credential, right? This is the VCB component. So if we pull that out, that's what extract the data in this whatever means. If we pull that out and undo the way it's encoded, we then get some CBOR-LD data. And the next step is to construct the map that was used when making that CBOR-LD data. So this is the tough step that I was talking about before, because you have to get this map exactly right. So the map is between strings and integers, right? What we've received is a payload that just contains integers. And we need to invert that to get it back to containing strings so that it's a you know, compliant JSON-LD VC that we can process as normal. So we have to construct this map, which we have to do exactly right. And then once we have that map, it's very simple. You just go through your CBOR-LD payload, which looks like this, and you turn integers back into strings. So at this point, now we have a JSON-LD verifiable credential. And it looks exactly like the examples that I gave earlier in the presentation. Once we have this JSON-LD VC, we can canonicalize the data in the rest of the PDF 417. So what does that mean? It means that we've taken all the rest of the driver's license. So before we just pulled out the VC that we needed, but now we take all the rest of this and we canonicalize it and we turn it into extra information. So for this specific example, the three pieces of data that we care about are first name, DAC, last name, and DCS, and driver's license number, which is DAQ, whatever that is. Here it is, DAQ. So verification of this verifiable credential barcode says the data in these three fields must be exactly what it was at credential creation time. So what do? We canonicalize, we see DAC, DAQ, DCS, we hash it, we do some more under the hood stuff, and then we can verify the credential. The last thing to do is to check status. So as I mentioned before, this is a terse bitstring status list entry, which gets expanded into full bitstring status list entries during verification. The algorithm by which to do that exists in this specification, and then those can be verified as well. And that's it. That's the full flow. So pull out your credential, undo some encoding to get CBOR-LD, construct your CBOR-LD map, decode the credential, now you have JSON-LD, create the extra information, and then verify. And that's it.
Cool. Thank you. This is very, very helpful, actually. Thanks. Manu, please.
Yeah, from a UX standpoint, just like a customer experience standpoint, you take your mobile phone, you open the Verifier app, you point it at the back of the driver's license, and you get a green check mark. So it's literally you just kind of point your commodity mobile phone at the back of a driver's license, and that's it. It'll give you a green check mark, or it'll say, you know, X mark, this is, you know, this driver's license has been revoked, this driver's license has been suspended, or somebody's tampered with the data on the driver's license. You can't trust it, right?
Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's it. Sorry. One more thing. We did ask at some point if people wanted like test cards. We have physical cards. So if you want some mail to you, we can do that. And then there's a website, that you can go to with your just regular mobile phone and use that. So that's up today. You can use this using a standard mobile phone, and a web browser. So the Verifier app's just a website that you go to, you click scan, you point it at the card, and it tells you whether or not it's a valid card or not. And we have test cards for like valid cards, and we have like invalid cards that you can test as well, ones where they've been tampered with so that you can see what, you know, a verification failure looks like. That's it.
Thanks. Right. Any other questions? Manu, please.
Sorry, not a question, but I would be, I think it's important to note who's funding this work. DHS has been, funding, a good chunk of this work, along with, California DMV. And the National Association of Convenience Stores. So all of those organizations have, kind of a deep interest in ensuring that fraudulent IDs aren't used in the market. So a huge thank you to each one of those organizations for making this sort of work possible. That's it.
That's great. All right, I have one last question. This is, Wes, this is more on your comment about CBOR LD, where, you know, the canonicalization needs to be like very exact. Like, so, like, it sounds a little bit, finicky where things have to be exact. If there's like one little mistake, like things doesn't work. So can you kind of, comment on the robustness or, for example, if things change, like, how do you actually make sure that the system is robust over time?
Yeah, so when I say that you have to be very precise, what I essentially mean is that, so there are two steps for CBOR LD. There's compression, which is going to be done by, you know, say, an issuer, and there's decompression that's going to be done by, say, a verifier. And in both of those steps, the exact same map from strings to integers has to be used. And that map is constructed by processing the contexts that exist in the verifiable credential. So when I say that it's very precise, what I really mean is that the algorithms that the issuer and the verifier in this example are using to compress and decompress the credential must construct this exact same map. So, I mean, if both versions of CBOR LD that are used are correct implementations, there's no, I mean, it's fully robust, right? It's just that you need to make sure that you are using a fully conformant version of CBOR LD and that it's the same version that was used by the issuer and so on and so forth. Otherwise you won't be able to consume a VCB as a verifier. Does that make sense?
Got it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. So if no further questions, I think this concludes today's W3C CCG meeting. Does anybody have any last comments or thoughts or agenda? All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Wes. Thank you, Manu. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.